Well, good morning, everybody. Let me get everybody's speaker situated and try to figure out what the heck we're doing down here. But right now what's happening to us is that we had a little bit of a crash, and so now everybody's having a tough time trying to get all their levels situated because Mark messed with the levels because he thought he was disconnected from the station. And in reality, the station was asleep. Is that the end of the day?
Sure.
And Andy's sitting here with us. Andy runs our mechanical operation. Her business card says full-time babysitter for the men at Salem Boys. Mm-hmm. Alan's sitting here next to me. He's my son, my only son. Andy's my youngest daughter. And Alan actually helps Andy and takes care of people that are mean to Andy. Is that correct?
Yes, that's accurate.
That's accurate? Yes. Or do you take care of people that are mean to him?
Both. Yeah. I don't think very many people are mean to him.
Okay, pull your mic up closer to your mouth. There you go.
Okay.
And anyway, so we're here talking about cars. You're welcome to join us. There's three people here. Andy, how many years of experience do you claim?
Oh, I don't even know.
20?
Yeah.
20, Alan?
Yeah, 25.
Okay, so between you, 45, and I've got 40. Mm-hmm. So we got 85 years of experience in a variety of different areas.
Sure.
So you've handled customer service, you've handled the books and the payroll, mm-hmm. and you handle what Alan doesn't want to. Is that right? That fair?
Sure.
You know,
we play to our strengths.
No, but Alan's not allowed to.
Oh. Who's the one that makes those rules?
Well, that's kind of common knowledge. Alan's not allowed to handle the money.
That was my rule 100 years ago.
That's been, yeah.
You are not allowed to.
It's going to stay for the next 100.
What's that?
And it's going to stay for the next 100.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. He's not allowed around money. I hope he's not even his signature on the account. Because money goes through his fingers like water goes through most people. But nevertheless, 602-508-0960. Right now in your business, Alan has a business that does diesel work, so Chevys, Fords, and Dodges. And by the way, if you have an excursion with a diesel motor in it, and the year spread is?
You want a 7.3.
A 7.3, okay.
Yeah.
I was wondering what the year for the 7.3 was.
2003.
2003, excursion for sale, then would you send me an email, mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And if you're the original owner, that's even better. The price just went up. Right, Alan?
Yep.
Oh, if you've got your maintenance records.
Oh. If they're bound.
If they're organized by date and you might have a chart in front of all of the work orders, you are... It's just cherry on top.
The mileage, what they did, yep. And how much it cost.
Yep, and if you don't, go do one, and then contact Mark and tell him you have all of that, and it's pretty much a done deal.
So that just happens to be the car I want because Alan bought one.
Oh, now you want one?
And now I want one.
Oh.
Yeah, because that's really the perfect car for me.
Why?
Because
you have 10 kids and you have to look around.
No. It's perfect for me because, number one, the dogs will have a whole lot more room.
Sure.
In the back. It folds down so I can call a sheet of plywood back there.
Sure.
Right?
How are you going to get it in?
Turn it sideways and slide it in.
No.
You can't get it in?
No. That won't
I could always get a piece of plywood in my Suburban.
Okay.
Okay. You can't do that?
Mm.
Okay.
I don't know where you're going to sit if you do because the back seats. Yeah, no.
Does the back seat fold down?
Yeah, or remove. Yeah.
Okay. All right, well, that's my dream. I'll make it happen. I have to take the passenger seat up then to haul it. But I have a truck, too, so it'd be all right. But the 7.3, the Excursion 7.3 is just really a vehicle that I admire. And the fact that you got one and you won't let me use it, you won't let me drive it, then means I'll just buy my own.
Okay.
And then I'll have you fix it up faster and better than yours.
Okay.
And then you're going to want to trade me, and I'm going to say no. Do they make a twin turbo kit for the 7.3?
No.
No, okay.
If they did, he would have it.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, if you have a car question or a car problem. Alan's really good with diesel performance in the Chevy, the Ford, and the Dodge. So kind of if you have the code, that's beneficial. But if not, talk to us about what's wrong, what's it doing, what's not. what it is in doing, figure out, help us understand, is it a cold start problem or a hard start problem and stuff like that. We can handle all kinds of mechanical issues with respect to diesels, but we also can handle motorhome between the three of us. We can also handle pricing issues with some parameters. And so those are the kinds of things that we typically talk about, 602-508-0960. One of the things that's changed a lot, and this was something that I was looking through our list of makes and models the other day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any idea how long that list is? Because we have every make that has ever come in here.
Mm-hmm.
So Alfa Romeo to Mercury Zephyrs and everything in between. We have motorhomes and boats. We've done a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Then in those makes, we have, I think the ratio is like 10 to 1 with respect to 10 models to every make or even more than that. That
yeah.
makes up for some of the Toyotas and stuff. Do you know what a G80 is? What kind of car a G80 is? It's a Genesis.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. I think we have like 1,300 different
models.
Models.
Of cars and trucks and motorhomes.
Mm-hmm. Of anything that's come in here.
And boats is just kind of a generic. We don't have 16-foot, 18-foot, 20-foot or nothing
no.
like that in the model. It's just kind of a boat.
Yeah, we just do motorhomes is just generic for, you know, Chevy, whatever the chassis is, and then motorhome. Boats the same way. Trailers are the same way.
Yeah.
So those are just kind of generic to that.
And I think we see those, if I'm not mistaken, I think we see those a lot when it comes to annual stuff. People will bring their trailers in on an annual basis and have us pack the wheel bearings and, mm-hmm. and do the tires and wheels and all that other, rotate the tires and,
yeah.
and that kind of stuff. So mm-hmm. it's kind of an annual thing. Mm-hmm. Have we still got Steve?
Yes.
Steve, then I need to go to Steve because I forgot Steve, and I'm sorry about that, Steve, so I apologize. How can I help you today?
I had a quick question. Oil change at the dealer is the first one. It was free. I know you're an oil wizard. They put on there a C500 oil booster for $16.99. Now, you're a big proponent of oil, and there's, you know, so I was just curious.
I think they just ripped you off for however.
Well, they gave it to him for free, he said. But I think my question would be, like, would you, if you had to pay for it, would you use that?
No.
Right? No.
What is it again?
It's just oil booster and the oil change. And they call it a C500 oil booster, $16.99.
What kind of vehicle is this?
Nissan Versa.
I don't even know what that is. I've never even heard of an oil booster.
Mm-mm.
Let me tell you what I think.
Okay.
You can't put something in the crankcase that's not going to throw the oil that's in the crankcase out of specification. So there's nothing they can defend themselves on because they just threw the oil that they put in. They threw it out of specifications by putting in an additive that would have enhanced one of 40 different chemicals or declined the created the absence of one of 40 different processes or chemicals in your oil. It's something, I'm guessing, it's something that costs $2 a bottle. They sell it for tremendous gross profit. And if they have to give something back because the customer's mad, then they give back what effectively is $2 worth of cost, but they're going to give $16, but they're losing $2. I don't know the exact stuff, but that's something that does come and go at times, and it does create a problem for some people because they're concerned about it. They don't know what the benefit is, and you'll get answers like, it enhances the detergent. That's a lie. It enhances the viscosity. We don't want to enhance the viscosity. We want it to flow like a 10 weight when it's cold and flow like a 30 weight when it's hot. So we don't want to mess with the viscosity. So the detergent or the viscosity, or it helps handle moisture. That's a bull. The engine temperature handles the moisture. Once the engine gets over 212, the water turns to a vapor and the PCV valve sucks it out and sends it out the tailpipe. These are just enhancements. Let me ask you this, the better question. How much did the oil change cost?
It was free, but like I said, the total was $62.33. And it was no charge to me, but mm-hmm. so maybe next time if I go to the dealer, I'll say, give me your full synthetic 020, and then just take off that $17 because I don't want the booster.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
And how much is our 020 synthetic?
For you're probably in the 60 to 80 range, I would say, depending on how many quarts it takes.
And what we do on our pricing is we already know what our pricing is and what the market is, and so when I ask Andy that, she's going to, we already know that I can tell our market's, ours in the middle of the spread you gave us.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of what we try to do, is we try to stay in the middle of the spread.
Mm-hmm.
So if Andy's saying 60 to 80, then the spread's probably 70, and we're probably at 69.95 for a synthetic 3 or 4 quart oil change or whatever. But it's, you could, if you wanted to do something fun and you had the time, you could send an email to a major oil company like Mobil or Shell or Valvoline or Castrol or Chevron, and go to the technical department and tell them that they put an additive called this in it. Does that throw my oil out of specification? The answer will be yes. Then you could go back and say, if you wanted to be ornery, you could say, hey, I'd like you to change my oil again and leave the additive out. And here's something from Chevron. Here's something from Shell. And they said that they didn't think that was a good idea. Or patronize somebody else. What's that?
478 per quart on their synthetic.
I think we're about that, aren't we?
Yeah, that's probably not far off.
Okay. So
like I said, next time I'll get a 6230 minus 17 for synthetic oil change.
Yeah, that's a good deal.
Can I make a suggestion in a nice way? Now's the time to put that note in your file. So you call back and ask for the service right or service manager and just say, I'm a little concerned. I don't want to make a big problem out of this, but could you just take my file and put me a $16 credit plus sales tax, $16, $17 credit on it, so the next time I come in. So what you're saying to the service manager is, I'm not happy about this $16 ad. I'm going to use you again, but I want you to put the credit on my ticket. I think that's an appropriate and a fair and a gentle way to cross that border.
Well, he didn't pay for it, he said, yeah, so he got it for free. So at this point, it would, yeah.
Okay, so this is that's why oil changes right now we're moving oil changes closer together, which we shouldn't as an industry, because we really should see you once a year, maybe at the most twice a year, and every time you come in, we get a chance to eat on your wallet. So the tire rotations and the cooling system flushes and the cleaning of your throttle blades and then we have an exhaust fluid mix and all this other stuff. We lost all that.
Bearing, conoid pin.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yes.
Rotate the air in the tires.
Yes, yes. So we've lost a lot of that.
Thank you.
All righty. Thank you, Steve. 602-508-0962. If you have a car question, you're welcome to answer it. We'll tell you the truth. And have a discussion, and you're welcome to chime in as well, just like Steve did. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is Andy, my daughter, and my son, Alan. Both of them have been in the business for more than 20 years. It's not about our business. This radio show is not about our business. It's about helping you with your car questions and problems, no matter who you do business with. And that's what it's all about. So we don't name our shop. It's not interested in naming our shop. We're, like many other shops in town, we're busier than heck. So, but it's really a public service as far as we're concerned, and just helping you out and trying to decide what's best for you. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Let me talk about Action Auto Repair, and then we're going to get to our callers. They're at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since 1983. We've been friends since 1983. I have his cell phone. He has mine. And I know that he's honest. He's dependable. And all of our shops that are on Mark Salem's best car repair shops list, they all have the ability to say, I'm not the best guy for your car made in Korea, but so-and-so down the street or across the freeway is really good with that car. We're all good about that. We're going to send you to a place that's the very best for your car. Now, anybody can change the oil, and anybody can do brakes and stuff like that, but if your car, every time you start it up, the radio station changes and the horn honks twice, we're probably going to send you to the Kia dealer or the Kia shop first before we try to reinvent the wheel. So Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley, and I promise you it's a great place if you're in that area. Keith, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a transmission question. I have a 2008 Lexus RX 350, original owner, 76,000 miles, and I did a transmission fluid exchange or change at 65,000 miles. And recently, I believe I have a 4-speed, Recently, I'm getting a hesitation or a lurch occasionally, not every time, from third to fourth gear. I don't know what to think about that or what to do about that.
I think probably what you're referring to is called a flare. And basically it kind of flares when it shifts between third and fourth. Is that kind of the right terminology?
That would work. Well, it works for me.
Okay. I don't know why it would have just started. Yeah. It's not a CVT transmission, correct?
No.
Well, it's been 11,000 miles since the thing, since so it's not like it just started.
You can manually shift that if you want. And then fourth gear, you probably have an overdrive or a lockup too. So if you want the lockup and the overdrive not to, then you just ride the brake pedal with your left foot a little bit. And so long as the brake lights are on, then the computer's not going to shift. Let's just pretend that you have a 5-speed and it's 1, 2, 3, and then it's lockup and overdrive. And lockup means it's locked straight through the transmission, and overdrive is like 10th gear on a 10-speed bicycle. But those are kind of seamless shifts, but you can typically just manually shift it from first to second, second to third. But if you just feather the brake pedal, you'll keep it out of lockup or overdrive in most cases.
The other thing, too, is we've seen, well, just like my car, we've seen where people think it's a transmission issue, like myself, and it's actually a misfire or something like that. So that could be a possibility.
Yeah, that's
as well.
That's
a lot
come
of times,
lot lately.
Yeah, it's happening more and more where you think it's a misfire, and most of the time you think it's a transmission issue, and it ends up being a misfire.
Now, in your particular case, mm-hmm. was it on throttle up, throttle down, or even throttle or coasting?
It was throttle up.
Okay, was it hard throttle up or soft throttle up?
No, it was like if I was on the freeway at a steady speed and say, I'm going to throttle up to pass somebody or something like that, I could get it to do it every single
chatter.
Time.
It would chatter, mm-hmm. so to speak.
Tip in this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it was, I had it, you know, at the lower end, I could get it to do it somewhere around 40, and then I could get it to do it, you know, between 60 and 80, but it wouldn't do it less or in the middle, but mine ended up being a misfire issue.
And then what was the fix, Alan?
It was a coil boot.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how many, I don't know which car you're talking about.
My Explorer.
Okay. So you had 6 cylinders on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So one of the coil and the boot, it was misfiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so you figured out that it was the number 4, but it could have been the spark plug. It could have been the boot. The mm-hmm. boot's cheap. The spark plug's not. And so that's the diagnostic. Did you drive it before you fixed it?
Alan? I didn't fix it.
You didn't fix it? Oh, that's right. You're the supervisor of the shop.
Eddie fixed it. He swapped plugs and coils before.
Okay.
It was the boot had kind of come apart, so okay. he knew that. But then he still swapped it.
He took probably 4 and 5 and swapped them.
Mm-hmm.
And if the problem moved to number 5 from number mm-hmm. 4, you're home free.
Yeah. So I would say to the caller, Keith, I would get it diagnosed. You know, they'll be able to tell if it's a transmission or a misfire or what the case may be.
And most of us will drive that stuff for free as long as you don't take us for a ride for 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes we get in a car and the person says they can make it happen and they can't, and then we end up losing a technician for 30 minutes while they try to do it. But if you can learn how to do it, but I think the real key is if it's a transmission problem, gently applying the brakes enough to blind the light, to shine your brake lights, that won't correct a misfire. It won't. The misfire will still be there. Do you have any check engine light that goes along with this? Nothing?
No.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
I'm in North Phoenix.
And do you have a shop that you like?
Well, I've been going over to Carmel Automotive for a couple of things just recently. I've been so lucky with this car and my wife's Kia. I haven't been in a shop in a long time except for oil changes.
Okay.
That's good.
Okay, what part of town, what part of up north?
7th Street and Bell.
Okay. Well, we got Kurtz at Bell and I-17, and that's something that on a 1 to 10 scale for Kurtz, this is going to be a 4 or 5. That's about it. To find it. Not to fix it. The effort needed and the knowledge needed to diagnose it. This isn't that tough.
Mm-hmm.
So this would be something that most of us gray-haired guys could do on a test drive, especially if the driver can practice or show us how to make it happen. And that's the real key there.
But number one is engine or tranny. We got to mm-hmm. figure out engine or tranny, because then we can point you in the right direction. If it's tranny, Kurt's probably will probably punt and send you somewhere else. Where if it's you know, if it's automotive, then yeah, he's well really equipped for that.
Yeah.
Okay, that help you?
Okay, I'll try to pay more attention. That's been so intermittent, and it's at general. Well, everything I do is gentle. It's at gentle acceleration is when it happens. So I'll work on trying to get some consistency on that. Okay, yeah. Thank you much.
You're welcome.
You bet, Keith. And that's the hard part. It's not a good idea, Keith. You're probably still listening to us. It's not a good idea to start trying to fix this or find it right now when all we have is an intermittent problem on a certain throttle. Mm-hmm. It could, this could be a TPS as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he had 76,000 miles on it. That's three times around the Earth. And the throttle position sensor usually lasts longer than that. But it could be a glitch in the TPS. So there's so many different possibilities. But what he didn't say, he didn't have a check engine light. And that's kind of the trigger there that says, hey, the computer's identified at least an area of concern.
Yep.
Well, even like mine, I mean, mine was bad.
And no check engine
never
light?
Never threw a check engine light. Not once.
How long did you drive it bad?
A long time.
Hey, long? Because she thought it was a tranny.
I thought it was a tranny. So I
didn't want to do it.
And
you run the shop.
I understand. But I was like, I can deal with this. As I'm in my car.
So at the end of the day, did you write a work order on it?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, and you wrote a work order on it, and you handed it to Eddie, who's one of our senior techs,
yeah.
And who's a super-duper Ford guy.
Yeah.
And you're driving an Explorer. And so Eddie goes and drives it, and then he comes back and he says, I swapped this, and this is the boot and stuff mm-hmm. like that. What did he charge you? Labor.
I don't know.
We do pay our technicians to work on our own
of
cars.
Course,
they certainly don't pay shop rate, but they we do pay them. So 602-508-0960, and we have five lines right open. We are struggling just to keep Andy won't quit laughing. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960 if you have a car question. If there's an argument in the house with respect to what oil should we use or when should we rotate our tires.
Or a family argument.
Or a family argument.
We have lots of those. Call us.
Okay, it's not polite when you're doing radio to be laughing on some secret thing. So upstairs in our facility,
we have a
bathroom.
No.
That's a Salem bathroom, okay? And one of the technicians went by the door, and he said whoever was in there was making lots of noise. So when he went to Alan blamed it on Andy, and when he went to Andy blamed it on Alan. And the consensus of the family, it was Alan. That's all there was to it. And so I'm not sure that Nate knows the truth yet or not, but he does now.
He knows.
He knows now. It wasn't Andy.
Oh,
anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Has there been any cars that have come in lately as an example of something that should have been done a long time ago? That seems to be one of the things that always used to tickle me, is they'd come in and they would complain about the car pulling right, and then you'd pull it in and the right front tire was showing cord half the tire tread, and it had been curbed and the bottom of the tire had been pushed, you know, inward, and it was like, this didn't happen just the other day. This is something that's been going on for a long time.
Oh, we always see stuff that's, you know, light years overdue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brakes and tires and shocks.
I wouldn't say it's, I mean, it's often, but then you have people who, you know, are by the book and really take care of their vehicles and really maintain them and, you know, are really on top of it. So
what's the answer to the question, how often, if my car, let's say my car's been made in the last 10 years,
mm-hmm.
okay, how often do I need to come in for what? How many times a year for what? I think, in my opinion, depending on the kind of oil you're using, it can be between 3 and 5 times a year.
I would say, depending on what kind of oil it would be, once or twice.
Okay.
Well, it depends on the mileage. I mean, I got a guy that uses full synthetic that we see him every 3 weeks on a 10,000-mile oil change.
Okay, so we're calling him in at 10,000 on a synthetic oil change.
On a diesel.
Okay, fair enough.
You know, it just depends on the mileage.
Yeah, because, okay. I mean, his is so different than ours. I mean, he's, you know, got business accounts where these guys are driving. It's work trucks. That's totally different than, you know, some of our customers that are don't drive, maybe drive 3,000 to 5,000 miles a year.
Okay.
So it really just, yeah.
And that's a one oil change car.
Yeah.
On an annual basis, yeah. It's a one oil change car. No matter if it's 3,000 to 5,000 miles a year, really any oil that you put in there is probably going to last 3,000 to 5,000 miles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
So that, now you do the cards for oil change, right?
Mm-hmm.
How many do you send out a month? Do you know? Or do you do it quarterly? Or how do you do it?
No, we do it monthly. And I would probably say, I'm trying to think, those sheets are, I would probably say 150 maybe.
Okay. Little yellow cards that mm-hmm. say, hey, this car, are you identifying the car in mm-hmm. case they have five? Mm-hmm. This car is due for an oil change. Mm-hmm. Does the car a manufacturer on the sticker that you print?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it'll say your Lexus or whatever,
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah.
Okay.
And those are all, I mean, that's just going by time. So that's the big thing is obviously there's no way for us to track for our customers how many miles they're actually putting on their car. So a lot of times people call and say, I'm overdue based off of the 3 months or whatever it is. That would be for semi-synthetic. Everyone's driving habits have just completely changed. So,
a lot.
Yeah. So it's, you know, we always say if you're overdue by the date, still try and go to the mileage because, you know, unless you've hit a year's time.
Okay. And you're talking about the sticker in the upper portion of the mm-hmm. left-hand side of the windshield.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Are we doing stickers, Alan, on every car?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Upper left-hand?
Mm-hmm.
See, that's a real problem because a lot of people aren't. They're going with, they're resetting the maintenance minder on the computer on the car,
mm-hmm.
but we don't really know what that mileage is. So we're just going by the oil that we put in. So we have level one oil. That's what, 3,000 to 5,000 mile oil change.
Mm-hmm.
And then level two is 5 to 7,500, which is a semi-synthetic. Fair enough, or five.
We're not really pouring conventional, so it's just the semi-synthetic and a full synthetic is basically what we're pouring.
Okay, so the semi-synthetic is the 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then the semi-synthetic is north of 5.
Oh, the full synthetic, yes.
Full synthetic, mm-hmm. is what I meant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and what's the clock on that? 10,000 miles, 12,000?
No,
miles?
I think it's somewhere around probably 8, give or take.
The hard part is that everybody's kind of different, so you have to pick a number that's going to hit the sweet spot as many people as you can.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have some people with a semi-synthetic that could put on 2,000 miles a month,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden they're whacked out after 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
But now when someone asks the two of you, should I pay attention to my reset maintenance minder, oil change on my car, or to your sticker, what's the answer? That's a tough one.
I usually say whatever comes first.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if the oil change oil light comes on before the sticker is, then just go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And the computer in the car has kept track of how fast you've gone, how many times you drove it cold, how many times you drove it hot. It all the different algorithms and what the ambient temperature was and all that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
it makes its decision based on that stuff that we don't have access
mm-hmm.
to. So.
Yeah.
Are we putting synthetic in a lot of cars and just once a year oil changes because of the driving habits of the customers? 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 miles a year?
I mean, yes, but I mean, we're doing what the manufacturer calls for on those vehicles. So, unless the customer requests otherwise.
Okay.
So.
And that's the hard part, too, because how many makes and models do we have in our computer system for cars and trucks?
Yeah, like 1,300.
1,300.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for us to say, yeah, this is without going through everybody's owner's manual. And so it's kind of a partnership. We're going to give you some guidance on the sticker. And I think most of the shops around us that we believe are good shops and have the customer's interest, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah, well, they can look it up, too, and see what the manufacturer requires based off of that customer's vehicle.
Right.
So the guys can see how many quarts it holds, what kind of, you know, oil they should be using, that kind of a thing. So typically they go off of that unless, like I said, a customer requests, unless it takes semi-synthetic and they request full synthetic or a specific weight or, you know, whatever the case may be.
Okay. And the difference between a semi-synthetic and a synthetic is really just an oil change interval. It just adds some time to the oil change interval because a synthetic is a full synthetic.
And cost.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right about both. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. Well, it's 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to be here till noon talking about cars, so you got plenty of time, an hour and 15 minutes. We have one line with Norm. We're going to get to him in about 30 seconds, but the phone number, if you have a car question or a car problem, is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. I'm going to take Norm, and then we're going to talk about the oil shortage that we're kind of experiencing pretty much around the horn. Norm, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, we can.
Great. Hi, Mark. Listen to your show virtually every week and just love the hell out of it.
Thank you.
I really do. I used to tune cars all the way clear back in the 60s, clear up through the 70s and the 80s until the damn computers came on board. And now I can't do anything. It seems that way anyway. My question is, I have a 2017 Toyota Corolla. And I've got 112,658 miles. I'm sitting in it as we speak. And you know something? I've never had any problems with the brakes. Never changed the brakes. Everything's original on this thing. What I do is change the oil every 5,000 miles. It's the only thing I've really ever done to this damn car. And it still runs like a top. It just runs great. My question to you is, can you recommend somebody I can take this to? To get like a, what I would call like a, just a tune-up, I guess. I want to get somebody who can take the plugs out, exchange the plugs, and just do the normal stuff that I'm too lazy to do and can't find the plugs anymore.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. What year is it again?
17.
2017, and how many miles are on it?
122,648.
Okay.
Yeah.
You don't need anybody to do it. We'll just answer your questions right now for you. Andy, at 100,000 miles, north of 100,000 miles, what should be done on this car that hasn't had any maintenance for the first 100?
Yeah, I would say definitely spark plugs. Okay. I would be looking at all the fluids.
Alan?
Yeah, you go through your wearable stuff, your belts, your hoses, your plugs, your coil boots, your rubber
components. That's what I'm thinking. Belts and hoses, almost for surely, because the car's a 17, so it's 5 years and 100,000 miles. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure I'm comfortable with the cooling system. So cooling system, a lot of fluids, right? Tranny service at 100.
Probably.
Okay. Cooling system, we're going to do that when we do the hoses and the belts. Mm-hmm. Spark plugs, that should just be take them out and put new ones in. Mm-hmm. And then what we're trying to set you up for is another 100,000 miles of no problem. Mm-hmm. If you buy your tires from, like, Discount Tire, every time they rotate them, just ask them to look at the brakes or let you look at the brakes.
I don't know that they'll do that.
Yeah, I never did that when I was there, but, yeah, I don't know that that's...
And they're not going to tell you what the brakes are, but you can look at the brakes yourself.
Ask them, when it's off, do you mind if I walk out there and just have a little pocket flashlight and do it?
Yeah. And then what part of town, because he's asking for a shop, so what part of town are you in?
You know where Luke Air Force Base is? I'm sure you do.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm real Verado, which is a little area beyond Luke Air Force Base.
Okay.
That's where I am.
You know, the closest I can come is Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I've got Auto Dynamics up there at Grand Avenue and 107th Street. I know Auto Dynamics. I know Chuck since the 60s. So Chuck, the owner of the shop, is a friend of mine, and he runs a good operation. Larry Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Both of those are capable of doing all the stuff that we talked about.
All right. Indian School at 38th. Is all this information, that specific stuff, shops you just talked about, is that on? You do have a website, right?
Yeah, just marksalem.com.
And then you'll just click the Best Shops link, and it will give you a breakdown.
And it'll give you a map and stuff. But I'm looking at the big map in the radio studio right now. Automotive Dynamics is in Sun City, and Harker's at 38th Avenue and Indian School. And geographically, those two guys are capable of doing what you're asking them to do. And this is on a 1 to 10 scale with being difficult. This is really nothing. Oh, what about the timing belt?
That might be a chain that late.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if he is, he's the thing probably looks like a rubber band at this point.
Yeah.
Okay, now if that's the case, let's talk about that for just a second. If that's the case and it is a rubber timing belt that needs to be done, mm-hmm. There's a benefit because the timing belt labor is going to pay for the fan belts and the upper and the lower radiator hose.
There's going to be some labor savings.
There's a duplication of labor. Mm-hmm. We're doing the front of the motor. We're doing three things to the front of the motor, and the deepest one is the timing belt. Mm-hmm. So that makes it really easy.
Yeah.
So that's something you need to ask them. If it's a chain, we're going to leave it alone. If it's a belt, I think that, along with the fan belts and the upper and lower radiator hoses and the heater hoses, all of that stuff kind of goes together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so it's called, I'll just get on your website.
Okay.
Mark Smith. How do you spell his name then?
Salem like the cigarette, Mark with the K, and Salem like a cigarette.
Okay. All right, sir. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Keep up the good work, too. I love listening to this program.
Well, thank you for that. Thank you. All righty. My family doesn't because they've listened to it since 1988. but we've talked about Action, and we've talked about some really good shops in town. We've talked about Kurtz. We've talked about Harker's. Automotive Dynamics, we've talked about them. But here's the deal. When it comes to these kinds of shops, these guys, I know them. I know they're honest. They're dependable. I know we all have customer issues, including my own shop, and we work together to figure them out. But what's really comforting for me is that the shops that we've talked about just this hour are guys that I've never had a problem with. If someone called and had a complaint, then I would listen to the complaint. I'd call the shop. The shop would call the customer back, and that would be the end of it. And then I would follow up and say, did the shop handle it to your satisfaction? And the answer has always been yes. So those are the kinds of people that I have on my list. They all have to have been in business a long time. Gray hair is an automatic yes. You have to have gray hair. You have to have been in the same facility for years and years. And almost all of these have family involved. So just like my business, my wife and I, and then Andy and Alan, all four of us have the same last name, and all four of us can make decisions. And so that's kind of how it is. It's that way at Harker's. When you walk in, Ellen's at the front counter. She's the one that's going to greet you. Her husband, Bob, runs the store or the shop in the back. When you talk about Kurtz, Kurtz is just a good guy as well. Kurtz has been around a long time, family-owned operation. Kurtz runs the shop, but he has lots of guys around him that really do good work. And then you just have lots of different people like that are just well worth the time to talk about.
Mm-hmm. The most important thing is they know the difference between right and wrong.
I like that part. I like that part.
If it comes down to one thing, a lot of shops in this valley, everyone knows that don't know the difference between right and wrong. And
it's convenient for them not to know the difference between and wrong.
And they're not, you know, they're looking out for the customer. And, you know, if there's an issue, they're going to handle it.
In
a good way, not just tell the person to pound sand.
And that's kind of a good thing in this respect. I don't know the last time I've had a complaint on a shop. I do know about 3 years ago we had a complaint on a shop that involved a $1,000 bill.
Mm-hmm.
And we had said to the owner of the shop, we need you to make this refund. Mm-hmm. Everybody that's looked at this, the insurance companies involved, other shops, me, we've all said you need to write this check. And he said no. And so our promise to you is if a shop says no to what's come to be, then Mark Salem will write the check, and then the shop goes away. At the very last minute, he called Andy and said, I've changed my mind. I'm going to make the refund. And that was good. But he knew that the next day he was coming off of our website, and he knew he would never come back on our website. But these guys don't pay in any kind of... no one can pay to be on the list. That's the bottom line. And we're real proud of our shops because I don't think this year we've had anything. I don't think...
No, we haven't for years.
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Yeah.
We haven't had a complaint.
Mm-mm.
At all.
No. I think... And we all work good together. I mean, I think we, you know, make changes or do different things as the industry changes or needs change and things like that. So we talk and have that communication, which is good.
And I remember one time Shop A had a problem, and Shop B we asked Shop B, would you look at this and give us a fresh pair of eyes? And Shop B looked at it and fixed it, And that was the end of the issue. And it was just something so unusual. And he was so good that he found it and fixed it. It was a vibration. And so the customer's happy. Shop one is happy mm-hmm. because it was a difficult fix. And top shop two was the hero.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody was happy. So
yeah.
those are the kinds of good things. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, we're going to be back in just a few minutes, and we're going to take more calls, and there's five lines available, and Gil is the one that's on the phone, so when you he'll answer KKNT, would you like to talk to Mark, and you say yes, and he'll ask you your name, and then he puts you on hold, and then in my earphones, I have obviously two sides, or two earphones, on the right side, he talks to me, and on the left side, you talk to me. And so it's real simple in this highly technical aspect. And Gil is the engineer that makes our show run and look and sound good. And he's the one that's responsible for making sure that I hit all my marks. For instance, I have to break at exactly 30 minutes past the hour. Not 30 minutes and 20 seconds and not 29 minutes and 50 seconds. At exactly 30. And it's Gil's job to make that happen. And if it doesn't happen, it's his fault as well. I just want to add that in. So, I think Gil and I have been together since 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And so, we've got 12 years?
11 years
tied together. Jeremy did a little bit at the very beginning, and Jeremy's the one that does a lot of our promos. But Gil has been with me for better than 10 years. Mm-hmm. And so, the two of us can read one another's mind. Last week, I missed a break by about 3 minutes, and it was a hard break.
Oh, geez.
And I said, where were you? And he goes, I just figured you were going to stop talking sometime. I said, I just stopped looking at the clock. I just stopped doing that. One of the other things right now that I'm seeing a lot of is, and people, a lot of stuff that deviates dramatically from the owner's manual.
Mm-hmm.
And it's well, what does my owner's manual say? 100,000. Well, why are you suggesting I do this particular procedure at 50? Well, this is Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's typically some kind of a response that says your owner's manual doesn't really apply to Arizona. So you want to comment?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's places that are going to sell different services for their own benefit, period.
And the frequency of the service is more than anything else.
Sure.
If we can convince you that Arizona, you have to take everything and divide it in half, that really benefits them.
Of course, yeah.
But with today's fluids and belts and hoses and all that kind of stuff, it's not uncommon. And spark plugs. We've pulled spark plugs out of cars they ran perfectly that had 100,000 miles and had been around the world four times.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not typically what we want you to do, but that does happen. And some people just drive it till it misfires, and then they bring it in, and then you find out it's a spark plug, or in the case of that car you talked about, mm-hmm. you had a boot, the, mm-hmm. a spark plug boot that was bad, the rubber boot part.
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, from different shops, they have packages, like a 60,000 mile package, or a 90,000 mile, or 120. So we get calls saying, hey, what is your 60,000 mile package run? Well, unlike some other shops, they say that's, you know, $400 or whatever the case may be. For us, we will take what to do at 60, look at your car, and say, you know, is the coolant, does it need to be flushed? Does this, you know, service need to be done? And kind of look and see what state your vehicle is in, not just in general, and then price it out accordingly.
I always tell people the same thing. They say, you know, what's a 90,000-mile service? And I say, well, how much is it going to be to tile my house? And they say, well, I don't know. How big's your house? Well, I don't know. How many miles you got? I mean, that's the kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want this room done. You know, so it's as needed. That's a very good guideline, the 90K, but it's an as needed. If we pull, I tell the people all the time, if I pull your tranny fluid in, it's pink and smells sweet. We're not doing it.
Right.
So,
I mean, typically we wouldn't recommend it. We could say, but if you want it done, this is the price, you know.
Yeah.
And then the customer ultimately chooses, but
it's a comfort zone for the customer.
Giving them that choice.
It's a comfort zone for the customer. And that's okay as long as that conversation occurs in front of the customer, your conversation, the other shop's conversation. That's what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to have that conversation in front of the customer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not uncommon. Everybody that's been in business knows what bad coolant looks like, what bad oil looks like, what it smells like, what spark plugs look like. That's bad. We'll be back in a minute. Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. For the next hour, we're here talking about cars and oil and tires and inflation and fan belts and when do I do this and when do I do that. And the shop says one thing, my dad says another, and then another shop or the dealer says this. And so those are the kind of difficult situations. And I think you'll agree that most of the time when someone is outside the norm, it's for a reason. So sometimes, there are times, we tell people you can go another 20,000 miles on your transmission oil because we know that they drive between here and Tucson every day. Mm-hmm. And we know that the fluid doesn't have a lot of water and moisture in it, and we know that the fluid's nice and pink and cherry and all that stuff. On the other hand, we've got some of our customers that drive 5,000 miles a year, and they drive from, you know, their house two blocks away to church, and then you know, and then we know the spark plugs are blacker than black. We know that the choke is never open completely on their carbureted or their fuel injected vehicle, and so as a result of that, we kind of have to modify that. Mm-hmm. Have you guys had a car come in where you just took it out and kind of roughhoused it a little bit on the freeway and fixed something?
No, I know where you're going, getting at, but yeah. Not
lately.
Not really, because nine times out of ten, I'll just tell my customers to do it themselves. Okay. Like, for the next day, just beat the crap out of that thing, you know, run it hard.
Okay. And what we mean by that is at the appropriate time you're getting on the freeway, there's nobody on the freeway, just put it to the floor and hold it as long as you dare until you're, you know, approaching the speed limit or whatever. It's just run the horse. Stop walking the horse mm-hmm. everywhere. Run the horse. And at the appropriate time, and if you're on a two-lane highway and you're going to pass somebody, when you pass them, don't pass them 1 foot faster than they're going. Pass them, stomp it to the floor, get it into passing gear, and go around them.
Mm-hmm.
We basically do this every day. Or you can be like us and just naturally that's how you drive your car.
Of course it is. Let's talk about your Explorer. What year is it?
16.
And how many miles are on it?
Almost 100.
Okay. Mom's is a 14, and she's got 140,000 miles uh-huh. on it. 140. I'm a 10, a 12. And mine's 146,000 miles.
Uh-huh.
And I tell people, fluids and rubber stuff is what all on the diesel, that's all we worry about, is just fluids and the rubber stuff, the hoses and the belts and the fluids. Mm-hmm. There's really nothing. But there, do you see diesels that sometimes you fix by just going and quote unquote driving them?
Not diesels per se.
Okay.
Not diesels, more gas stuff.
Okay.
More like direct injection stuff.
Okay. Yeah. So you'll have a car that comes in here and it'll have a rough idle or it'll have a hesitation on when it takes off from a traffic light or some kind of a problem. You'll go drive it and flog it good and bring it back fixed.
Yeah. And you notice if you're doing a good job, because when you hammer on it, you'll see a big puff of black smoke.
And you know that you're just rattling the engine and shedding the carbon to keep causing the problem.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, and it's probably a lot more important to do that now with a lot of these direct injection vehicles than, I don't know about ever before, but
I'm wondering if that oil additive they're adding has something to do with that DI, the direct injection cars.
Well, all right, let's talk about it so everybody else knows. On a normal car with fuel injection, we have an intake manifold that delivers air and a metered amount of fuel to all the cylinders. With direct injection, the injector itself is right there at the valve, and it's going to spray fuel on the back of the valve.
No.
Or in the cylinder itself.
Yeah, so basically, what's happening is the valves on the other cars, the oil is sprayed the fuel is sprayed upstream, so as it comes in, it washes the back of the valve off.
Okay.
The direct injections don't have that because they spray between like a diesel. Mm-hmm. They spray between, so then you get all this carbon crap built up.
I understand. Yeah. I understand. But the repair is the same. It's just drive it a little harder. But the direct injection is causing this problem. How many direct injection cars do you guys come in? And the common problem is what?
Rough idle misfire.
There you go. Bingo.
A ton of them.
That's right.
And we're finding it very important to be doing those as we, you know, used to stay on non-direct injection, wallet flushes, fuel injection services, things like that. It is very important that those are done and on a routine, you know, schedule.
Okay. So the injector is going to spray on the back side of the valve.
Yes.
And to spray the fuel at the back side of the valve. So when the valve opens, this concoction of air and fuel is then aspirated into the engine, inhaled into the engine.
Yeah.
And everybody else is way upstream.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So it rinses off the back of the valves as the fuel is coming in. As it's entering the cylinder through that valve, it's rinsing it off. Well, there's nothing to rinse off on the direct injections because they don't spray on the valve.
Okay. And they spray into the cylinder.
Directly.
Into the cylinder.
Yeah, at 2,500 PSI.
Okay. But we're really talking diesels, right?
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay. On gasoline, we're running 2,500 PSI.
Yeah.
Direct injection.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's just news to me. I didn't
3,500 on, and everything now is DI.
Okay.
So
we can almost cut metal with 2,500 pounds of water.
Absolutely.
2,500 PSI of water. A water jet is something that we can cut metal with almost.
Yeah, that's 30,000. But
okay.
Yes. It's not nearly what the diesels are, but yeah, everything. All the new Fords, all the new Chevys, all the new cars, everything is all direct injection. So we're seeing a lot of that stuff.
Okay, so the symptom is?
Rough idle, misfire.
Okay. Misfire codes? Or just chuck.
I think both.
Yeah, I think sometimes if it gets bad enough, cold. And keep in mind, if it gets bad enough, I mean, there's times you got to pull the head to clean them off. You can't mm-hmm. clean them from. If it starts misfiring and stuff, you're late. That's why we're trying to get people on schedules. I think most of the owner's manual say like 40?
30. I think it's 30.
30.
30 for an injector clean?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Or for a cylinder clean?
Decarb.
Okay. Decarb. Yeah. A decarb. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Decarb, yeah. Okay. Basically, go ahead.
What's the market for a decarb? Well, how much is that going to cost a customer? What's the spread?
I want to say that one's like.
I would say $200 to $400.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just say it's $350 or something.
Yeah.
And so when you do that, how do you know when you've cleaned it? And is it going to be pristine? Are we looking down the cylinder walls? Are we looking in the spark plug hole? What are we doing to know? Or do we just automatically know when we plug this fancy dancing machine onto their car and we walk away for 30 minutes that it's going to be okay?
We hope. Some of them you can see the backs of the valves, but a lot of them you can't.
Okay.
And so basically all we're doing here is it's like a mister that you put at the front of the throttle body. So it's just basically running it like the old cars do.
Okay.
And it's a half hour to an hour.
No, it's more than that.
Oh, no. No, the time it takes for the chemicals.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, it sits there and runs for maybe even up to an hour. And like I said, 9 times out of 10, but there's been a couple of them we got to go in there with walnut shells and actually hit them with if you can get access to them, hit them with the back with a bead blaster and to get the carbon off.
Okay, and that's how many times a week or how many times a month do you have to go into that extreme?
No, maybe 3 or 4 times last year.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So just some, and on a car count of 30 or 40 cars a day. So somewhere around.
Well, I take that back. Using that machine probably 3 times, but there was a couple cars in the last year that we can't fix it, so you actually got to pull ahead and clean it.
I think there was probably one or two of those last year.
One or two of those.
And then what's the how many of them are we doing on an annual basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis? How many times are we using this cleaner to clean the back of the intake?
10 to 15 maybe a month, you say?
If that. I don't even know if it would be that high.
Is it one a day?
No, okay. I wouldn't
no,
say
no,
one a day.
No.
Two a week, three a week?
Maybe.
Okay.
I mean, they kind of come in clusters, it seems. It's not, and it's not something like we're pushing. Obviously, if there's symptoms, that's one thing. Or if they come and ask, about services and we know it's direct injection because we've seen that this is a known problem or issue that occurs.
The intake valve opens and closes and introduces, in the old days, an air and fuel mixture to the cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
Then the valve closes, there's an explosion from the spark plug, and that's where you get power. What's happened since then is we've got this direct injection, or the old style injection kept the back of the valve clean because we were introducing this spray of gasoline upstream a ways. So as it went past the back side of the valve, it cleaned it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the problem is we don't have that. And as a result of that, the backside of the valve, we have oil that comes down the valve from the valve guide, and we need to lubricate the valve guide. And the oil was in the years ago, rinsed away with the fuel that was delivered to the car.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the oil just cokes, and it turns into a big black lava-looking stuff on the back of the valve.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you're going to start having misfires and rough engine and rough acceleration and rough idles.
Yeah, what that does is it builds up and then it causes the valve not to seat all the way. So
and there'll be a backfire under those circumstances when it doesn't close all the way. Yeah. And so the typical, Andy, answer this, either one of you, the least amount you're going to spend on your direct ejection car is this much a year. The most amount you're going to,
well, you got to figure I think it's around 30,000 miles is what they call for on most of them. I could be wrong on that. So if that's the case, if you're driving 12 to 15 a year, you know, if you're spending $200 to $400 every other year for that, I mean, it's. I don't think that's excessive when you look at it that way.
Okay, so the service is 200 or 400.
It's probably somewhere in the middle. I don't know what what everyone's charging, but I know it takes the guys, you know, an hour or two, and the procedure, you know, to do the complete procedure plus cleaner and stuff like that. So
okay, and this is one or two times a month we're seeing this direct injection problem.
No, I wouldn't say one or two. I think we see it more than one or two times a month.
Yeah, maybe 5 to 10.
Yeah.
Okay. In the car count again, the car count is 200 cars a week, so that's not a significant a percentage of cars.
Yeah.
But they're all coming in with the common denominator is rough idle, low power performance, or backfiring.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the symptoms, the diagnosis, and then the repair.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we've covered that. 602-508-0960. Go ahead.
Was there one waiting? Did I hear the gun?
Gil, did we have somebody in hold? Q?
Sorry, I was on the phone. It was a 1 minute queue.
Oh, 1 minute.
Oh, a 1 minute queue. Okay.
Oh, okay. I'm hearing stuff.
No, it's no problem. Anyway, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. And when we come back, we're going to talk about oil and oil quantity, and then we're going to talk about China. We're going to do another, because I get a lot of calls for the China discussion, and I'll give you that as quickly as I can give it to you. Nevertheless, if you have a question, 602-508-0960. And I'm going to do something to Gil that I never, ever do. I'm going to get out of my break 15 seconds early. We'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. I'm here with Andy, my daughter, and my son, Alan. They run our family operation. It's not about our shop. It's about your car. And you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. And I'm going to get to two callers in about 20 seconds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom Blackwell at Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. I've known Tom for 20 or 30 years. He does old cars. Vintage cars. He does installation of air conditioning, but he does oil changes and tune-ups and fan belts and codes and check engine lights and all that other kind of stuff that everybody else does. He's in the northeast quadrant of the valley, and I would really like to recommend three or four shops up there, but unfortunately, my filter's kind of tight, and my filter is my filter, and it's just tough to find somebody up there that has lots of years of service, has great Google history, better Business Bureau record, a good financial stability, stable business, good employees, ASE certified technicians, can clean bathrooms. Those are just a small list of the stuff
ownership.
I look for. What's that?
Ownership time.
Oh, ownership time. Absolutely. Yeah. There's nobody on my list that hasn't been in business more than 10 years. So everybody, and they all know what business, what's good and what's bad. So Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway, if you're up in that area, then I would suggest that you try him if you don't already have a garage that you've fallen in love with. Tom, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. I've got a 95 Oldsmobile Cutlass Supreme with about 160,000 miles on it. And last Saturday, I moved it out of the driveway so I could do some work on my house. And when I went to get it later that evening, it would not start. I turned the key on. All the lights on the dash were fine. Had a security light blinking. And I checked the batteries okay. The fuses seemed to be okay. Then I thought, well, it would be easier to work on my car if I could push it closer to my driveway. So I put it in neutral and tried to push it, and it won't move. And the only history I can give you on this is last year I had a little trouble with it starting in park, so I put it in neutral. And it started fine. And then the problem completely went away. It's been running and starting just fine. And all of a sudden, it's done this.
Well, the security light flashing bothers me because it's seeing something it doesn't like. And I would still say that I want you to left hand over the top of the steering wheel, you're going to hold the shift. First of all, is the shifter in the console or is it on the steering column?
It's on the console.
Okay, so you're going to right-hand the steering column, and you're going to hold the key to the start position, and you're going to wiggle it in park, and then let go of the key, put it in neutral, wiggle it in neutral, and then watch the headlights. If you go to my website, marksalem.com, at FAQ 28, it's no start, no crank. And it teaches you how to look at the headlights to determine what might be wrong. I'll give you an example. If you turn the headlights on and they're yellow, and then when you go to start it and the headlights go out, you have a bad battery or a bad battery connection. Those are the two strong possibilities. On the other hand, if the headlights are white and bright and you hit the key and nothing happens, then I want you to start wiggling the shifter, because the neutral safety switch doesn't let the car start unless it's in park or neutral, and oftentimes those go bad, or they'll get filled with a soda pop that somebody spilled in the console or something like that.
What about the brake pedal switch, or pushing it all the way down and then pulling it back with the back of your foot and kind of releasing it?
You're absolutely right. Okay. You're absolutely right. So a lot of them want brake lights, so they want your foot on the brake. And Andy's, what she's saying is pump it or be mean to the brake pedal and then pull it back with your foot and pull it back towards you to release the brake light switch.
See if your brakes are check the brake lights in the back when you're applying that as well.
And typically when the brake light switch sticks, you'll open up the garage and you'll see the red glow of the brake lights if the battery's not dead. But you said you started it up and backed it out. And so I'm thinking it's probably not going to be a dead battery, but it could be. But FAQ 28 will walk you through that. But the security light bothers me.
Yeah, I checked the battery with my Flute meter and it was fine. What concerns me is I've never had a situation where I turn the key on, put my shifter in neutral, and I can't push my car. It won't move. So I'm thinking, like you said, it could be that safety interlock on the transmission.
Well, no, because your shifter, if your shifter moves up and down, it should roll in neutral. That's all there is to it. It should roll in drive. It's an automatic. It should roll in drive.
It will not budge.
Okay.
It's like the transmission's locked.
What if the starter is like the Bendix broke on the starter, and the starter is like staying engaged
or jammed in the flywheel?
Jammed in the flywheel, because you wouldn't be able to move it at that point.
We're talking about one-off things here, one-in-a-year things. First thing I want you to do is turn the headlights on, white and bright. Okay. Have your wife stand in front of it. Put it and slam it in park. Put the parking brake on and then hit the key. If the lights are white and bright, I need them to change intensity. If they don't change intensity, then your signal to crank the engine over is not being sent. And so that's where we're going to start looking. But the confusion part of all of this is, even if it's in park, well, it won't roll when it's in park, but reverse, neutral, drive 1, 2, and 3, that car will still roll. So the real question is why won't it roll right now?
Yeah. I mean, it would have to be something with a starter. If you rolled it out, that's the only thing that can really lock it.
Did you drive it out or roll it out?
I drove it up the street about 30 yards.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Well, something else that you can do, is you'll need help with this. You're going to put it in neutral or in park. I'd put it in park first and get some of your friends to shake the car forward. Push forward and let it come back. Push forward and let it come back. And rock it hard. You're not going to hurt anything, I promise you. And then at that point, see if it'll start. And if not, then put it in neutral and see if it'll roll. And then if it doesn't roll, then we got a brake problem or a parking brake problem or a starter that the Bendix is jammed in the flywheel. Yeah. This is going to be something that we're probably going to see once a year.
It's going to be easy to find once we do. I mean, it's not going to be hard.
Yeah. And the other thing you can do is, you know where the starter's at. You follow the positive cable to the starter. This is something you need to, your wife or your buddy to pay attention to. Someone else is in the car. The shifter's in park or neutral. Their foot is firmly on the brake. And I'll crawl underneath, and when I start banging on the starter with my hammer, I want you to try to start it. And but the real problem here in this whole story is the car won't move right now.
Yeah.
That's the real problem. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. The answer to this isn't going to be a tough one to diagnose.
No, it's going to be easy.
Yeah, I'm sure with trying those things that we've just given him, he'll get some leeway.
I'm pretty sure that's it, too. Mm-hmm. Well, good luck. And if you have any questions, Tom, mark@marksalem.com and give me a phone number. I can't walk you through the repair, but I'll do the best I can to give you plan B if that's the case. mark@marksalem.com. And Brian, I can't do you justice because I've got an hour, or 1 minute and 20 seconds, actually a little bit more than that. But you know what? I'll take Brian right now.
Yeah, okay. Brian. 1 minute, 10 seconds.
Yeah, we'll take the question. And
yeah, we'll take the question. Let's talk to Brian real quick. Brian, you're up.
Hello, Mark.
Hi.
I have a question on the gas direct injection engine.
Okay.
The over-the-counter fuel treatments and injector cleaners, are those even worth using?
Alan, a yes or a no?
No.
No?
No.
Andy?
I would say no.
Okay.
No.
They still spray it through the injector. And not cleaning anything.
And here's the deal. And Alan, the problem is being caused by us spraying fuel at the backside of the valve and creating a carbon problem, which is going to create a drivability problem and an idle problem and a fuel economy problem. When you start injecting it through the air system, when you start bringing it into the air system, you're not even touching the back of the valve. And then often, and what else is there? Is there?
You just said that opposite, but
okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
It's okay.
And so it's those kinds of cleaners don't really get to the place that we need to go. And that's the real problem. So, you're really flushing the injector as opposed to flushing the area of concern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
602-508-0960. And Brian, if you want to continue to talk, stay right there. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And we were talking to Brian about direct injection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we kind of covered everything for him mm-hmm. with respect to that. We're not real fans of those kinds of over-the-counter treatments. First of all, when you buy them, you don't know if they're going to help you any. And if you've already got the problem, they're not going to help you at all.
Right.
So it's too late for it at that point. But you could use that if you wanted to. We also had a friend of mine named Goody call write in, and we were talking to Tom about his Olds Cutlass and his 95 Olds Cutlass, and he pulled it out, and he parked it in the driveway, and now it won't start, and it won't move. And Goody came up. What did Goody say, Andy?
He said the shift linkage might be disconnected.
Okay. So he's exactly right. He's mm-hmm. exactly right. The shifter has become disconnected from the transmission.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it thinks it's in park or in reverse or neutral or drive or something like that. So that's why it doesn't start.
Mm-hmm.
But because the shifter has come loose and it's still in park, he doesn't know it's still in park, and that's why it won't move. So it's in park no matter what the shifter says. But the shifter, because it's moved, it isn't going to start the car. This really, and now if we know that, then really and truly all this is going to be is a cotter pin. We have to find which portion of the linkage came apart
mm-hmm.
and put the linkage back together and put a cotter pin in it and a washer, and we're done. But Goody, he's an old gray-haired guy. He works on Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah.
Now, you have a story about Goody.
Oh, yeah. He helped Eddie. Saved all of us.
Big dollars.
Big time.
First of all, he's an old-time Mercedes-Benz, but he knows the old ones as well as he knows the new ones. So what happened on the... We were working on a Mercedes-Benz where we shouldn't have been. Anyway, what happened? What did we do?
I don't remember all the specifics, but I know we were evacuating or recharging the AC, and I think we opened the door in that process, and it
caused a heck of a calamity.
Yeah.
And so after you do research on the internet for hours, and so does everybody else, and the staff is looking for the fix for this, then somebody calls Goody.
Yeah.
And Goody says, do 1, 2, 3.
I think we ended up taking it to Goody.
That's right. That's
right. Because it locked him out of the head unit, the climate control head unit.
Yeah, that's right. So.
And so we took it down to Goody's in Scottsdale. We're in South Tempe, and he's in North Scottsdale.
Mm-hmm.
We drive it over there. He lifts the hood. He waves his magic wand for a period of 8.5 minutes or something like that, and then pronounces the unit fine, and he sends him home.
Yeah.
And what did you do for Goody?
I think we sent him lunch or something.
Oh, I remember distinctly.
It was not enough of a payback, but... Something. Yeah.
And those are the things that do happen to all of us.
Sure.
It happens to all of us where there are other shops that call us, but then again, we called Goody when we got in a jam over this Mercedes-Benz. And so the idiosyncrasies of specific cars and stuff like that, a lot of time it's a matter of just waiting it out. If you have an anti-theft problem, if you just leave the car alone, take the key out of it, shut the doors, and walk away from it for 20 or 30 minutes, oftentimes you come back, everything's going to be okay. So it's just really a matter of knowing that. But he saved our bacon a couple of times on Mercedes-Benz, because you really need to know. Folks, if you have a Mercedes-Benz, no matter whether or not it's a new one or an old one, but especially if it's an old one, the guy that can fix the transmissions and the engines and the air conditioning and the ignition systems and stuff like that, when you look at him, he walked with Jesus. He's hand in hand with Jesus. This guy's been around since Jesus was a little guy. And Goody knows more. And he won't admit it, but I've been into his shop before, and he's got cars with Dieter plates on them. You know what that means?
He's fixing dealers' work.
He's fixing the old Mercedeses for some dealer who said, oh, yeah, we can fix this, and they couldn't.
Yeah.
And just like we did.
Yeah.
Just exactly like we did.
I think we've got a caller.
All righty. Who have we got?
Say hello to Chris.
Chris, good morning. How can I help you?
Morning. Yeah, I've had some trouble with my 2010 Cadillac. I was traveling, and it needed a new battery. So it just sat at the house without a battery in it for a few months. But when I get back, I go to hook up the new battery, and I had just a huge current draw. The weird things turned on, like the headlights and the windshield washer and the horn. But it wouldn't unlock, and I can't get it out of park. And I did some research. Somebody said maybe it's a body control module. But I don't really know where to start with the thing or how I'm even going to get it towed. I was wondering if you guys could help me out with that.
Well, I think towing it's not going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Every tow truck guy in town knows how to put that thing on a flatbed and deliver it someplace. I'm sure when you stick the key in and you turn the key on with the battery disconnected, at this particular point I would say to you, disconnect one of the battery cables, take the negative cable off of it and leave it off. Okay? That's what you want to do first.
Right.
Then if you're going to call, you can call the shop you're going to take it to and say, hey, I've got this Cadillac. It's dead in the water. And I need somebody to be able to disconnect the transmission, probably at the linkage underneath the car, load the thing up, and then deliver it to you. And then I need you to look at it and call me with an estimate. That's the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we would want you to do for us. And this, on a 1 to 10 scale, this isn't nothing more than a 5 or a 6. This isn't going to be a big deal. But once we fix it, then we can answer all the questions on how the heck it happened. And that's the easy part.
Okay.
Any sparks when you were reinstalling the battery?
Oh, yeah. It had a huge current draw.
So there were some sparks?
All those things started lighting up. Everything except the doors wouldn't unlock. The basic essentials you need to get in the car and start it is operational.
But did it look like the 4th of July under the hood? I mean, was there sparks everywhere?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, lots of sparks because, all those other ancillary items that came on, like the horn and lights and everything else, as soon as I put it on.
Okay.
I would call the shop and just tell them, the 1, 2, 3, 4 steps of what happened, what you did, all sorts of things like that, and how it is now, and then just
these
have
GMs,
it towed.
We see it a lot where they're real sensitive to current. They burn up TCMs a lot on these things, and a lot of times what happens is it usually happens after you jump start it. TCM wouldn't cause all the problems you're having, but a BCM could. But if you saw sparks, that's typically not normal.
And typically, when there's sparks, there's something terribly wrong where the positive has hit the ground. And so maybe the positive cable got up against the exhaust manifold, and maybe the positive cable burnt and melted to the exhaust manifold. So now we have a positive cable on a ground, and you hook it up, and you got lots of sparks. Typically, we can answer all those questions, the repair shop, after we see the car.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see any smoke?
No.
Okay, good. That's good. Because usually if you hang on to it long enough, you'll see smoke. And when you see smoke, you're in big time trouble. So under the best of conditions, I think somebody else needs to look at it. Anyway, thank you very much, Chris. That was a great question. And 602-508-0960 is the phone number. If you have a car question, the lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960. And we'll be right back. During the break, I just want both of you to know that my phone is ringing off the hook, and it's other shop owners. And
are we on the radio right now, or are we just talking in here?
No, we're on the radio.
Oh, okay. I didn't hear you come back, so I was just wondering. Just wanted to make sure.
Okay.
No, I don't want to say anything inappropriate. Or I was actually protecting Andy. Well, you know, she talks like a sailor.
Oh, I know.
I know. Commercials. So.
I know. And,
in private.
And many of the guys that were calling me right now were using sailor language.
Yeah.
And they said that there's no question when you hook up battery cables and you see lots of sparks that they got them crooked. They said, Mark, you know damn well that no one's ever going to admit to hooking up the cables backwards. And that is the truth. I've been working on cars since 1968, and no one has ever admitted that they hooked them up backwards. Part of the problem is that red doesn't mean it goes to the red. And black doesn't mean it goes to the black.
Well, the other thing, too, is you can get the same battery with opposite-oriented terminals. And it's as simple as a, 72R or 72, regular. Mm-hmm. R would be reversed. And all they would have to do is grab the wrong one off the shelf. They're right next to each other. You know, the guy at the parts store. Yeah.
Have you ever done it?
Absolutely, I have.
And I have, too.
Absolutely.
I have, too.
I've never changed my battery, so I haven't.
but the idea is that you're walking real silently with what was his name? the Oldsmobile?
No.
The Cadillac, Chris. Yeah. You're walking real carefully with him and stuff like that, but in the background, my phone is blowing up with all these nasty texts from all the shop owners going, hey, Chris! Across the battery cables. I'm thinking that. I'm trying to walk through that slowly.
Well, if he did,
if
everyone's done it.
And not only has he done it, Alan, you have.
Uh-huh.
And I have too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I have too.
If you haven't, you haven't worked on cars long enough.
And if you swear you haven't, Goody, why don't you chime in, buddy? You're the oldest guy I know. Woody knew Jesus Christ when he was on the earth. That's how old Woody is.
Jesus has probably done it.
Yeah. What?
Jesus has probably done it.
Goody, you have my cell phone number. Go ahead and chime in. Have you personally ever, Goody the Mercedes-Benz perfection guy? Yeah.
You know, the funny part is there's a lot of vehicles now that you actually can't do that.
You can't.
The cables aren't physically long enough.
Oh,
And the batteries in a opposite oriented. There's a lot that.
Now they make it so you just can't even get to the battery.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah, you're taking the interior of the car apart, and you're taking the trunk apart.
Heather's I have a battery?
Heather's is under her passenger seat.
Oh.
In the floor, below the floor. So you have to lean it all the way forward, then move it all the way forward, and then yank it out.
Now, you guys know a guy named Tom H. in mm-hmm. the auto parts.
Uh-huh.
He's been a friend of our families for 20 years. Mm-hmm. He's one the nicest guy in the whole world. He calls me the other day, and he goes, hey, he says, I got a question to ask you. I said, you got a voltmeter? Yeah. He says, okay, I'm pretty sure my battery's bad. He has a Beamer. And I said, well, it's in the trunk. And I said, it's really heavy. And I said, but you guys have the Beamer batteries because we've bought them from you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. I said, you think you got this under control? Oh, yeah. So I call him, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours later. And he said, I haven't gone to get the battery yet. And my wife's got the car and I can't hoof it. I said, you're one of the big shots for this company. Just tell a driver to drive it to your house. Come on. So then I call him back that night or the next day. Hey, did you ever get it done? He goes, yeah, it took a little while. How many hours did it take? He said, it was a good 2.5 hours. He says, it took me forever to get the battery out. And then he says, you got to get it out. How do you get them out? And I think the Beamers are the top post. And I said, I just used two pairs of vice grips and just grabbed the terminals and just lift the battery right out. He says, well, don't you get shocked? And I said, yes, but your battery's dead, you said. So 12 volts isn't going to hurt me as long as those two pieces of pliers don't touch one another. So anyway, I was teasing the heck out of him because it took him like 3 hours to replace it. So those of you with Beamer batteries underneath the back seat or in the trunk or whatever, just know that it's not like a lickety...
Lickety jingle?
Lickety jingle kind of job.
Well, a lot of cars, not just Mercedes. There's a lot of cars.
Yeah.
The Beamers.
And some of them have to be reprogrammed or... Mm-hmm. have reprogrammed after battery replacement. So, I mean, if you're on the side of the road,
Yeah, you're
even if you replace it, you're still not going anywhere. So,
all right. Was there anything else we needed to clear up? Did you have any of the things? We talk about this stuff during the break, and then we don't talk about it on the air. And has Goody answered us yet?
No, he hasn't.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, call him up and ask him. call him up. I'll take your mic down. Call him up. Well, I wish I could get him on the air. I can't give Gil his phone number because everybody would hear it because they would hear me giving Gil the phone number.
We'll have to have him on at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a character, but when it comes to Mercedes, I've never met anybody we know people that are Chevy guys and Ford guys, and Mike Fenno, a Dodge guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got those kinds of guys. Alan, as far as diesels, I was up in Payson the other day, and the one guy that we know up there that's a real good diesel guy, he's got his 2-ton service truck, the whole nose of it off and half the motors out of it. Mm. And the one diesel shop in Payson has two bays. And he has more than 15 trucks in the parking lot that are either in service or partially taken apart or waiting to in line. It's unbelievable the amount of trucks that shop has.
Wow.
And the parking lot is just completely packed. As a matter of fact, there used to be a fitness group that had part of the parking lot because of the buildings, mm-hmm. and he's taken over the entire thing.
Wow.
Okay. So it's the diesels, I guess, is not something that a lot of... Are you doing lots of performance work on the diesels?
No.
Okay, so you're doing custom work.
Yeah, suspension and stuff, and then repair. Still lots of repairs.
Okay, so, all right, repairs. Give me a Ford repair. Give me some common Ford repairs on diesels.
Well,
you see a lot.
99% of them have to do with the emission stuff. With the DPF, EGR, SOC...
What's the SOC for everybody?
It's the, what does it stand for? The, hold on a second.
Well, if you don't know what it means, how is the rest of us supposed to know?
I'm sorry, not SOC, SCR, which is the,
Is it part of the emissions control system?
Yes. Okay. I just can't remember the name, SCR.
Okay.
But, so they all have to do with that. A lot of, software updates,
On the Ford side?
All the late model stuff.
So you're talking about somebody brings in a truck that's a 14, and when you plug it in, our system is going to tell us that there is an update available for this truck that we're capable of doing?
What we typically do is we'll scan the codes, and then we'll go to the computer and do research on the codes, and those codes will pop up. If you have these two together, there's a TSB for that, which is a technical service bulletin. That Ford has introduced a fix for this in January of 2022. So then you just update the truck.
Okay, so we have access to the chain of information about that truck and the codes and stuff like that.
Yes,
and that's something that you don't have to be a dealer to do it because we have access to the same stuff that they have.
Right.
And so is there any pattern failures on the GM side, the Dodge side, or the Ford side that you deal with on a regular basis? Suspension, alignment,
all of the suspension, all the front ends, especially with the oversized tires, all the, tie rods, track bars, pivot arms, stuff like that. That's all pattern stuff. I mean, the big three is just going to be your injectors. I mean, after a certain amount of miles, injectors, turbos, and transmissions. Those are your big three on those trucks.
Can I bracket those at 100 to 150,000 miles?
I would say 100 to 200.
Okay.
Depending.
Okay.
Yeah, 100 to 200.
I noticed that we've got a lot of trucks. I mean, we just brought one from Payson, back up to Payson, that had a tranny in it. Now you've got another one from Payson,
mm-hmm.
and you were doing a tranny on that. How did that go? Is that done? Or
no, we're still waiting on parts.
Okay. Well, and parts is a problem.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a major problem. It doesn't really define our day-to-day stuff. We have to wait for a part. Typically, what's the longest and the shortest period of time that entails?
We're 6 months on an engine right now.
Okay, but that's an exception.
That's an oddball.
No, yeah. No. Okay. I'm 6 months on Danes. I'm 4 months into veer cutters.
Okay, forget the engine replacement. Go to some of the other stuff. If you're having to wait for is it a week wait, a 10 day wait?
On that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 to 5 days.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of a delay sometimes just because of the parts not available.
Yeah.
And I think, too, sometimes they come in a lot earlier. People are kind of giving more of a buffer. So sometimes they come in earlier. Sometimes it's the full length of time or more. But
okay. And so when you call in, when our parts department, when Jeff and Sean call in, they put us in place. And then when it's our turn, the part comes in, we get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So that seems to work pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. It yes and no. It depends, because a lot of times what's happening now is we're seeing the dealers hoarding stuff. There's a lot of stuff they will not sell us.
Yeah. We have seen that.
I mean, that they will
and
not.
How do we go around that?
We
what
don't.
Do you do?
We find it elsewhere.
Okay, so what we're going to do is convert the part number from four to another part number in some other application and buy the part that way.
Yeah, but we've heard it more than once or twice that they're not they do have it in stock, but they will not sell it.
I just had one on Friday yesterday. I can't remember what it was now, but yeah.
And it's not that the dealers are our enemy. It's just one of our vendors. We have independent vendors. We have guys like NAPA. We have guys like Parts Authority and Factory Motor Parts. We buy parts from warehouses because we're an installer. So the warehouse sends it to the installer, and the installer installs it and sells it to the customer.
Yeah.
And so we have lots of relationships. And the dealerships, what percentage of our parts that we install in cars come from the dealer? Percentages. Is it 10% of all of our parts come from the dealer, 20%, 50%?
I would probably say 30.
That's okay. Exactly the number I was
thinking.
And
I was thinking 25.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking a quarter to a third of our parts are going to come from a dealer,
mm-hmm.
because we're not going to be able to buy any trim parts or any dashboard parts or any of some of the other parts in anywhere else. They're just not going to be there.
Yeah, there's specialized stuff.
And typically it's something inside the car. And as well as headlight bezels, the chrome around the headlight and all that kind of stuff. That's going to come from there or a wrecking yard. Is wrecking yards become an option for you? Are you looking for anything in wrecking yards, new stuff?
Obviously we advise the customer of that, but yes, we don't do it often, I wouldn't say,
yeah.
But...
Yeah, and it really depends on the part that's failed. Because
yeah.
if it's something
yes.
that we've seen before, we're not likely to put a used part in
right.
it. But if it's a one time, we've never seen this before, and we've diagnosed it as this, then let's try the
yeah.
used part and go from there.
Yeah.
Alrighty. My name is Mark Salem, and then my email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. So if you want to send me an email, ask me a car question, you can. I answer them myself. If you'll leave a phone number, sometimes I call, and when I do, I call from a blocked line for obvious reasons, but I'm going to identify myself right after your hello. You're going to say hello and say, "This is Mark Salem. Did you send me an email about your truck?" And you're going to say yes. And I say, "Okay, you got time to talk about it. And if not, tell me when to call you back." That's kind of how it works. Obviously, I don't want my phone number out there where I'm a 1-800-CALL-A-MECHANIC 24/7. That's the purpose of the keeping my number kind of secret. So anyway, thanks for spending your Saturday with me. Andy's been here. She runs our company. Alan runs the diesel, the performance. He does all kinds of suspension, tires, wheels, exhaust. If you're thinking about dressing up your diesel, you don't have to do business with us, but he might be a good source for you to talk to about maybe what some things you can and can't do or shouldn't do on your newer diesel trucks. And there's a lot of you shouldn't out there. Mark@marksalem.com.